This is a Squiz podcast. We're your shortcut to being informed. This week, our podcast is brought to you by BHP. Reducing greenhouse gas emissions in the production of iron ore and copper is critical. That's why BHP has committed to solar, wind, and battery agreements at mine sites across Australia. It's happening now at BHP. Visit bhp.com/critical to find out more. Weekly Wrap is the weekend news and what's coming up. I'm Kate Watson.
And I'm Claire Kimball.
This week, of course, Claire, we're in Sydney with those two knife attacks. And then other big news stories include flooding in Dubai, the Lehman decision and the fallout, and a business story.
Yeah, that's about Star Casino. Our recommendation this week is light and buttery.
Most clicked link out of the Squiz Today newsletter this week was also one of the biggest stories of the week. And it's a little bit serious. It's a little bit heavy as well as the news was this week. That was flooding in the Persian Gulf. So we're talking the UAE and Oman in particular. The worst rainfall for 75 years with an amount well over annual rainfalling in one day.
Yeah, a whole year's worth in just 24 hours. Some of the images that came out of there are just incredible. Mm. Dubai Airport has been affected. That means that, of course, international flights are affected. Mm. Several people died in that. The thing that stuck out to me was that rainfall amount. They had 120 millimetres in 24 hours, as you say, more than a year's worth. That's about 5 inches in the old scale.
Oh, this is where I got lost with inches and
millimetres.
That's
how my brain
inches. Yeah, got it.
During the La Nina years here in Australia, we were regularly getting that in a day and then the next day and then the next week. So it's just to highlight that region is absolutely not built for rain.
And the images really do show that. We'll pop a link to those in your episode notes if you haven't seen them. Moving on, as I said, it's been a really heavy week with two stabbings in Sydney with tragic consequences. Starting in Bondi Junction, Claire, of course, six people were killed by Joel Couchy. Five of them were women. Of the 12 others hospitalised, many were also women.
Yeah, and earlier this week, the New South Wales Police Commissioner Karen Webb said that while the attacker's motives were being investigated, it was obvious to her that he was targeting women. So that's a big part of the inquiry that's coming up. Tomorrow, there's going to be a candlelight vigil. It's being held so the community can come together and to honour the victims. Bondi Junction, the shopping centre there, the Westfield, has started to reopen.
Yeah, that only happened on Thursday. That was what was called Reflection Day. By all accounts, it was quiet. There were a lot of hugs, a lot of tears, a lot of flowers. On Friday, so yesterday, it opened for trade. Some stores opted to open, some will stay closed for a bit longer. All in all, a great big horrible week.
Yes, good way of putting it, I think. Those injured in the attack, many have started to leave hospital. Only one is still in intensive care at the time that we're recording this podcast. So that's some good news. That happened on Saturday. Then on Monday night, another stabbing.
And a Syrian church in Wakeley in Western Sydney, a 16-year-old boy attacked Bishop Marmari Emmanuel during a service with a knife. He was injured, as were some others. This one was declared a terrorist attack. The Bondi Junction attack was not declared a terrorist attack. They're quite different.
Quite different. And the reason for that is what happened in Southwest Sydney was declared as a religiously motivated attack, whereas what happened at Bondi Junction didn't seem to have a political or a religious or an ideological aim behind it. There's been quite a bit said about Couchy's mental ill health. That'll be a whole other rabbit hole to go down in that inquiry.
We saw his parents speaking about him being a very sick boy throughout the week. Back to the events in Wakeley, though, just a bit about the church. It's, as I said, an Assyrian church. Assyrians are almost entirely a Christian minority group who are based in Iraq, Syria, Iran, and Turkey. This specific church, Christ the Good Shepherd, draws many of its parishioners from the large communities in Liverpool and Fairfield who are Assyrian. The service, Claire, was also being live streamed.
Yeah, so Bishop Emmanuel is a very prominent figure in that community. According to the ABC, his sermons broadcast on their Facebook and their YouTube channels, they get a big following, more than 200,000 views.
That was a report in the ABC. And then just later in the week, I saw he's been known as the TikTok bishop. So he obviously has a large following on TikTok as well. This is all important context as to what happened next, because it was during a live streamed service that this stabbing took place. What happened from there was hundreds, some reports say thousands, of people from the local community went down to the church to confront the attacker.
Yeah, and that's where you get those pictures of this mob forming. Police then had to protect the attacker from the mob. He was actually locked into the church for his own safety. Damage was done to 20 police cars. Police were injured. And as the week has gone by, it's been really hard to actually get to the heart of what happened there. Mm. The reporting has been really quite vague about it.
I think I walked into the office on Thursday and said, I'm really frustrated. I don't understand what happened. I thought no one in the media was sort of explaining this to me. But then I went a little bit deep on it. I've listened to a number of podcasts and I've done some reading. There's an undercurrent of our leaders not wanting to inflame tensions by talking too much about the fact that the boy is from a Muslim community and it was obviously a Christian church. Mm. Even the bishop himself has said to people from his hospital bed this week that he forgives his attacker. His quote is, whether that person is a Christian or not, it's totally beside the point. The Lord Jesus always taught us to love one another. So very much a simmering of a lot of emotions.
Yeah, lots of efforts to make sure that things don't escalate even further. Our political leaders have given it over to police to investigate what happened and why it might have happened. The police commissioner said this week that they're trying to understand it themselves still, so there's a long way to go. Commissioner Webb noted that many who attended might not have been parishioners. They might have just been rioters. They might have just got on that bandwagon.
Yeah, I actually saw, I think it was the ABC had a report from Wakeley, and there were people who do go to the church regularly saying to others, you're not from the church, you don't go to this church, stop trying to involve yourself, this isn't about you. So lots of competing, opinions about who this mob was and why they were there.
And look, really the big takeout is just heightened emotions right across the board, of course, in the wake of those two attacks.
Exactly. Just to bring those two things together, one of the overarching themes of both of these terrible events has been that people have been able to watch a lot of what has happened online. Spending just a moment on X or Twitter, as I did on Saturday, there was so much misreporting of what was going on.
Yeah, and that then filtered down to our major news networks. We do expect them to get it right, that they have processes in place to actually filter out all that social media noise so that when they do put things to air, that they do get it right. But there was a man who was wrongly named as the perpetrator of the Bondi Junction attack. He's now suing Channel 7 for having his name put into that context. But more than that, so much information about both of those attacks has really spread online. So plenty asking about the responsibility of these social media platforms to make sure that that doesn't happen again.
Yeah, you'll hear a bit about the e-safety commissioner in the wake of all of this. Her name's Julie Inman-Grant, and the reason you'll hear about them is they have powers to demand content be removed. Anthony Albanese also weighed into this week. He said, we remain concerned about the role of social media, including the publication of videos that can be very harmful, particularly for younger people who have access. And he said they're working with the e-safety commissioner to use what powers they have to ensure a lot of this stuff is taken down. All right, Claire, other news. We'll start by lifting the lid on how we assess what's been what we call a big story, because we do say this a lot in the weekly wrap.
This was a big story.
How we actually come to that is that we have a newsletter called Saturday Squiz, of which you can sign up to via our website if you're not already. In that, we give a recce of the five biggest stories of the week and we put some data behind it. So last week, you said to me something was a big story if there were 50,000 searches or mentions of it in the mainstream media. This week, there were a number of stories that well and truly cleared that bar.
Yeah, it's what's made it a very unusual week. Usually one might get above that 50,000 level. Of course, that's not always the rule, but if one does get above that, it's usually the leading story of the week. This week, the five that we go across in our top five in the Saturday Squiz all well and truly made it past that mark. So looking at the Google Trends data, 2 million searches for Bondi Junction, 500,000 for the church stabbing, 100,000 for the escalation of the conflict in the Middle East with Iran firing missiles and drones at Israel.
Yeah, we've covered off the first two on Israel and Iran. I'm going to point you to our Squish shortcut this week. There's a lot to unpack there, the background, the history of those two countries and why we are where we are now. You and Alex cover that off in about 10 minutes. So I highly recommend listening to that shortcut. And in Squiz Press at the end of this podcast, we'll talk a little bit about News Club this week as well. And if you haven't listened to the interview with Adam Harvey, definitely do that. Next on the list with 100,000 searches was the decision in the Bruce Lehrman Omnishambles defamation case against Network 10 and Lisa Wilkinson. It took me through Omnishambles. Omnishambles.
It's a shambles on many levels. That was what the judge said. His language. It wasn't just some sub-editor.
Is it a word?
With a really, well, it is now.
Well, if the judge says it's a word, I think.
If it wasn't before. And look, we've covered off that unfolding case a couple of times in recent weeks. So I think where we can be helpful today is to highlight the nuance in that finding that Bruce Lehrman raped Brittany Higgins.
That was the headline everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. And what Michael Lee said in his decision was that that rape, and this is the quote, more likely than not occurred, but he went on to stress that it didn't satisfy the criminal standard of proof. That is, that it hadn't happened beyond a reasonable doubt.
And you can understand why people might be confused about what's going on here, particularly if you're not consuming this story in a deep way. You're just sort of looking at the headlines.
Yeah, the headline that he did rape her.
Exactly. So the first thing to say is Lehrman's defamation case was a civil trial. And I do think we've been over this before, but it's a really important point. This was a civil trial. And the reason a finding about whether rape occurred or not is because it was part of Network 10's defense.
Exactly right. So Bruce Lehrman won't go to jail, even though a judge in a court has made that finding. And because it wasn't a criminal case, and Justice Michael Lee said what he said, there's been lots of questions about whether a new criminal case in the ACT could be reopened. But the answer seems to be no.
Seems to be no at this point. As for what's next, Lehrman has another rape case to front in Queensland that kicks off soon. There's a defamation case that former Minister Linda Reynolds has launched in Western Australia against Brittany Higgins and her partner, David Shiraz. That's also related to what Higgins said in the interview with Channel 10 and The Project in 2022. So bring these all together for us, Claire, please.
Yeah. So I guess when it comes to Minister Linda Reynolds, former Minister Linda Reynolds, and her Chief of Staff, Fiona Brown, they were the people who were basically the employers of Bruce Lehrman and Brittany Higgins at the time that that rape happened back in 2019. In that Project interview, the main focus of that interview was about the political cover-up. So Higgins was accusing that Reynolds and Brown both went to lengths to make sure that that was all squashed. So when it comes to this defamation case that Linda Reynolds has launched, that's going to be a central part of it. What Justice Michael Lee said is that actually he found that Brown, Fiona Brown, the Chief of Staff, was quite truthful and that there wasn't any sort of political cover-up as far as he could see.
So that's, yeah, that's sort of where it's going to go next as far as this conversation. And just to extend it even further, there are now questions about whether Brittany Higgins should have received $2.4 million in federal payment as compensation for what happened and then the subsequent actions of her employer at the time. So the question is whether the National Anti-Corruption Commission should look into that at all. Basically, this one's not done.
Not done. We're going to continue to hear about this for some time to come, that's for sure.
Let's talk about the National Defence Strategy.
Yeah, couldn't fit that into the Squiz today, this week.
Another demonstration of the week that's been that something as big as billions of dollars of spending on defence doesn't make it into the daily news run.
Yeah, exactly right. So what happened this week? Of course, we've been talking over recent months about new strategies for defence. This is actually putting some money and some articulation around the new focus for what our defence forces need to be doing in the coming years and decades. There's an extra $50 billion for defence over the next decade, also redirecting about $72 billion in planned spending. They're refocusing it on having capabilities for undersea warfare and also for space and cyber.
I read taking it out of the air, putting it under the sea kind of vibes.
I think that's about right. taking it off the land as well.
Yeah, exactly. It means our annual defence spending will hit about $100 billion a year by 2030. 34. To really give a top-line talking point, the headlines seem to be about the fact that we no longer have a 10-year window of strategic warning time for conflict in our region. The US and China tensions is what they're referring to here. They aren't going away. The expectation is we should be prepared for conflict in the region.
Exactly right. A lot more to talk about that in the budget, I reckon, too, where the dollars land.
Coming up in May, of course, the business story you've been itching to get into, Star Casino.
Yeah. So, look, again, this probably would have made its way to the front pages had it not been for everything else. But this is about a New South Wales inquiry into Star, the Star Casino and its culture. It's got operations in Sydney and Brisbane and the Gold Coast, but this is focused on Sydney. And what's been happening there. The Sydney Star Casino was stripped of its casino license in October 2022, and it was only supposed to be for a three-month period, but it's been extended three times at the request of the regulator. It's been unconvinced that the company has actually done enough to renew its culture to be able to get its license back.
So to operate a casino, regulators need to be convinced you're good and proper people. We went through this with Crown, of course, in recent times as well. All of this has come to a head because there's an independent inquiry going on in New South Wales where executives are speaking at it. Some surprising revelations have come out, one in particular about a broken cash out machine. It allowed gamblers to just take $3.2 million in cash.
Yeah, cash that they hadn't won in the casino. This happened over a six-week period in June last year, and apparently word got around that you could take your ticket. So if you had a win at the casino, you get a ticket and you take it to the cash out machine, you get your winnings. Mm. You could put your ticket in over and over and over again and continue to withdraw cash.
I like this quote in the Sydney Morning Herald. Four ticket in cash out machines had malfunctioned and word got around, as you say. They came in there dozens, criminals, gambling addicts, even a few homeless people. By the time the casino noticed anything was amiss, $3.2 million had walked out the door. The issue there is to have a gaming license, casino operators need to have strict oversight of their financial position at all times. Instead, it failed to fix the machine for almost 2 months.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you might think that it's just one casino, so what's the big deal? But these operations deal with huge amounts of money, and they can be places where criminals go to wash money from crime. So they can do all sorts of other dodgy deals there too. Ensuring that casinos are properly operated is really important.
And they're big businesses. They employ a lot of hospitality workers. The Star has dropped by 75% of its market value over the last year.
Yeah, it's quite a bit. These revelations continue to hurt them too.
Claire, we're working with BHP again on Weekly Wrap this week because they're keen to share with Squizzers how the resources they mine are key for our economy's shift to renewable energy.
Yeah, so we often hear about the push towards renewable energy, but what doesn't get as much attention is the role that mining companies are playing in making that transition possible. Take steel, for instance. It's a key material used in the construction of renewable energy infrastructure, as well as bridges and transportation, hospitals and schools, and a big part of it comes from iron ore.
That iron ore mainly hails from Western Australia, and BHP says the importance of responsibly produced Western Australian iron ore is clear.
Yeah, and by that, they mean reducing the greenhouse gas emissions associated with iron ore production. That's why BHP has committed to a solar and battery agreement to help power their port facilities at Port Hedland.
It's happening now at BHP. And if you want to learn more, visit bhp.com/critical. You'll find that link in your episode notes. Coming up this week, Swiftie's album has dropped. So it's not coming up. It's come up. It's gone, but it's in the news. We're recording this before it's out, Claire, so I can't give our take, but I'm sure it's phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm sure coming up this weekend are a lot of people listening to a lot of new Taylor Swift.
That's true. We also talked about the Bondi attack at the top of the podcast and also that candlelight vigil that's on tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. at Bondi Beach. All members of the public are welcome.
Also on Sunday, it's the day that the Devil's Comet is going to be at its brightest.
I think I said to Annalise, our producer, can you explain to me what it is? And she said, Kate, it's literally just a comet that flies through the sky. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. And that's fair. But the point being that Sunday is the day that it will reach its closest point to our sun. Well, it won't come back around again for another 71 years. So this is your chance.
Yeah, I reckon most people listening, you're going to be dead by the next time it comes around.
Yeah, so now's your chance. And have a look.
Yep.
About an hour after sunset apparently is when we should turn our attention to the sky.
Yep, good one. Getting into the week, we've got Wally Lewis. He is one of the best rugby league players of all time. I've got clear memories of the King.
Mm.
Do you remember him? You're probably a little bit
young. No, but I mean, of course, you know every fan knows about Wally Lewis. Yeah, and he's talked a lot about his experience of the likelihood that he has CTE. He'll be at the press club next week and he's doing a speech just on that very topic.
Yeah, of course, that's the degenerative brain disease that's caused in part by repeated concussions. It's a big deal for athletes who play sports where knocks to the head are common. We're talking about it a lot more.
Mm.
It's one of those stories that is coming up quite frequently at the moment. This week there was a Collingwood player, Nathan Murphy. He announced his retirement from the AFL, just 24 years old, played in a grand final last year and had a big knock to the head. He has got ongoing concussion issues, so he's giving footy up.
He is. Collingwood very quietly are actually paying out his contract to the end of 2025. Yeah. This is such a big issue for our code. So closely watched how it's all handled. Moving on to Wednesday, but staying at the National Press Club, Commissioner of the Australian Federal Police, Rhys Kershaw, and ASIO boss Mike Burgess will be giving a speech. They haven't confirmed what it's about yet, and perhaps a slight pivot given the events of this week.
Yeah, exactly right. We'll wait and see what they do have to say. But notable that those two guys are doing that together. Mm. Of course, there's always something to say around terrorism and law and order. The Sydney stabbing attacks will no doubt get a mention in all of that. Something else to note about them, their five-year appointments are up in September. So, I mean, potentially we could get a new head of Federal Police, we could get a new head of one of our national security agencies on top of a new head of defence.
That we've already seen this year, of course. Finally, on Thursday, it's Anzac Day. The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, will be in Papua New Guinea.
Yep, he is going to be walking the Kokoda track.
Not the whole thing.
I don't think he has time for that.
Would be quite a big effort. He'll be joined by his counterpart, James Marape, obviously the Prime Minister of Papua New Guinea. They've been spending a lot of time together lately, Claire.
They really have. And, of course, we spoke on Squiz Today this week about the Solomon Islands. There's a big effort from the Albanese government to get really connected with our neighbours, whether they're in the Pacific or whether they're to our north, like PNG. At the end of last year, there was a big security pact that we signed with them. Also, we had James Marape address a joint sitting of our federal parliament this year. There's no secret, though, of course, that Albanese's visit is likely to coincide with a trip to PNG by China's foreign minister.
Wang Yi. Yeah. There you go. Okay. We'll look out for that next week. Squiz recommends. Claire, please tell us about your recommendation. I don't have one this week and I'm just going to lean very heavily on yours.
You've been too busy this week. Some weeks are like that,
I think,
right?
It's just that, yeah, look.
It's
been a big week and I think that Vegemite and butter on toast as a recommendation, but whipped together, really should sing on its own.
Yes, I think my recommendation is big enough to fill the whole segment. So look, it's un-Australian not to like Vegemite and butter on toast.
Oh, I'm married to someone who doesn't like Vegemite and it's a struggle every day.
Well, we're starting big, so I'm calling Sam un-Australian, so let's just start there. I've stumbled across a recipe last weekend where, look, it's not hard. You get a slab of butter, you get the equal amount of Vegemite, you whip it together in whatever sort of processor you have. It's amazing.
And you have it on toast.
You just spread it on toast.
Is it just a lazy way to have Vegemite on toast with butter?
No, it's an elevated way. Elevated is the word to use. When you look at it, it looks quite fancy because it goes that sort of creamy brown.
Like a bit like a peanut colour.
Yeah, actually, that's not far off it.
Okay, all right. Look, as I said, I just think this recommendation should sit on its own in its own special place for, yeah.
That's about as controversial as we get, I think.
It's interesting. And of course, we'll put the link
diplomatic
to that recipe in your episode notes. Squiz Press News Club this week was an interview with Adam Harvey. He's a former foreign correspondent. He was based in the Middle East for a few years. What it does, I hope, and obviously I did the interview, but what I hope this interview does, if you haven't listened already, is give you a really good understanding of how our best journalists are looking to cover the war.
the logistics, the nuts and bolts of these things. He talks about reporting from Israel and how that actually happens, how he gets information, how journalists are able to tap in. They can just stay in their offices, he was talking about, and just get fed information. And just the experience of all of that was so interesting to hear.
Yeah, he also has really good insights into if you were in Israel, what sort of news you're getting and what's top of mind for journalists there as opposed to what we're getting here. And of course, the inability for journalists to access Gaza and so then therefore how they are actually getting the information out of there. I thought it was a fascinating, fascinating conversation. You can give that a listen in this feed. And if you enjoy it, and if you enjoy Weekly Wrap, please leave us a review saying so.
Yeah, we haven't asked for a review for a while.
That's the ask this week.
Well, just to make it even easier, you go to the app, you find the review bit, and you just hit 5 stars.
That's also something that you can do if you don't feel like typing out a review, just 5 stars, 5 stars. Oh, that'd be fantastic. Thanks for listening to this episode of Weekly Wrap, and we'll be back next week with News Club, which will be on Ozempic.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.